Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
one must listen to Rockin' the Suburbs.
One must listen to Rockin' the Suburbs every day.
All right, we're in the middle of the week talking about Rush.
Wednesday.
We're going to get into another album here in a little bit. But before we do, I want to ask our guests. First of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Jim Lenihan. And with me, as always, is...
Patrick Foster.
Our guests this week are Bobby and Charles from DC band Night Streets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Bobby grew up in Ohio, like myself.
Mm-hmm.
But Charles, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Right here.
Our nation's capital.
I ask this because in Ohio, my memory growing up there was that Rush was a really big deal. I know I'm a little bit older than you, so I'll talk about that in a second. But was Rush a big deal out here in the Mid-Atlantic?
I mean, it was a big deal on rock radio, but I don't know if it was a big deal. I couldn't tell you. I think it was a big deal everywhere.
Yeah, it was big on DC 101, man.
Okay.
I know it was. Yeah, they ruled DC 101, and that was kind of the hard rock station. You never heard them on HFS. Like, you never heard them on the alternative station, and you almost never heard them on Top 40. But you heard them on DC 101 or the other. There was a couple classic rock, hard rock stations, you know, in the 70s when I was growing up, late 70s. But they played them all the time.
Well, and I think that's, you know, when people talk, you know, hating on bands goes back to when there was a time when all you had to listen to was one or two stations.
That's right.
And if you didn't like Rush, you were in trouble because they were playing that all the time.
No, you're right. Yeah. No, you're totally right. Oh, I saw that guy wearing a DC 101 t-shirt. No, he's not. Yeah, that's the Eliminator. I'm never talking to that guy. Well,
so it's funny you say that because where I grew up, we didn't have an alternative station. And so the classic rock station, or back then it wasn't even called classic rock because we were in the middle of it. It was the album-oriented rock station.
That's right, AOR.
Yeah.
Right.
And for me, it was WIOT FM 104 in Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah.
And they played Rush. It felt like every other song.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but it was a lot. To the point where when I was growing up, so I mentioned I'm older than Bobby here. But we're going to talk about Permanent Waves. Like Permanent Waves, I was, so I would have been 13. This would have been right in sort of like the prime of when I'm really discovering rock music. To a large extent, I kind of rejected Rush at that time. I developed an appreciation for them later. But I think part of it was just kind of this feeling of like this oversaturation. I mean, they were just on the radio all the time on that station. And that, and also, I think High School Cliques had a lot to do with it back then, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Rush kids, that wasn't exactly the group that I ran with. I was, you know, I mentioned the trombone. I was more in, like, the band geek crowd.
Yeah.
And the Rush kids were more like when the bus would pull up to school, they were usually the kids, like, across the street at the standing outside the convenience store smoking, right?
Right.
And I just wasn't part of that group. And
right.
So you identify yourself with certain cliques in school, and the music becomes part of that, right?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So, like, that's not for me.
Totally makes sense.
And then when I got to college in the mid-80s was when I just went, like, sort of hardcore alternative college rock, kind of stuff, and Rush didn't fall into that. So it wasn't until really I got older and, you know, I knew all the radio hit songs, as we're going to talk about here. It wasn't until I got older and sort of like opened myself up again to this band and was like, oh, this, you know, they did some really great work and I didn't appreciate it at the time.
Yeah. So. That's really interesting. Yeah. And let me, since you're there, let me just follow up with this. And we talked about a radio hit, but I was like you, Jim, you know, in high school, I was into certain kinds of bands and then I went really hard left turn, even in my senior year in high school, into all the alternative stuff, right? And totally was into that, and that's all I did, and I didn't want to align myself with anything but like the weird new music. How weird is it? It's not weird enough for me. Give me something weirder, you know? And I was always trying to out-weird people. And then it was like sometime around 1985 or 1986, I really got into marijuana, and I was hanging out with some guys.
This is like a therapy session.
It is. Okay. But, you know, they played Rush a lot, and like you, I'd heard a lot of the songs on the radio, like a lot of times, and I never disliked the songs, but they always kind of registered with me. But this song, Spirit of the Radio, this is when I had like a revelation, because in this song, you're going to hear a vocal from Geddy Lee, and I was listening to the song, and he repeats a line. He says something about your honesty, but then he sings it again in a way that just like woke me up. Yeah, so it was like, it was totally kind of in the background, but I still kind of dug it. But when he said, yeah, your honesty, and like woke up, he almost growled it. Mm. It was almost like Little Richard your or something. Honesty, it was buddy. So weird. Yeah, then I woke up. And then later in the song, they actually start playing reggae. At one point, I know. They start playing this weird reggae rhythm. And from that point, I was like really hot-wired on Rush. That just, it like jolted me out of my marijuana stupor. And that, just that one line though, you know, it was weird.
Yeah.
That's the song.
It's like, I mean, he said it just to you.
I know. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. It leapt out of the speakers right at me. It was beautiful.
That's the song. Like, that's the Rush song. Yeah, you know, that it is. That's the one that where I heard it grab me. Like I said on the other show, my mom's Ford Aerostar van. Like, it comes on WMMS in Cleveland. And, I mean, that it's got everything. Like, that is the song. The drums, the riffing, the lyrics, the delivery. What more do you need in a song?
The lyric in there that always gets to me is when he says, all this machinery making modern music can still be open-hearted. And like a criticism of Rush that I've heard, you know, is that it's sort of cold, calculated music. There's people who don't understand Rush or just don't like it. And a thing I've loved about Rush is that there's a lot of emotion and heart in their music, but they don't demand it. So it's sort of... You know, there's some bands like I'm thinking like Radiohead or The National, where it just sort of demands this kind of emotional attachment when you listen. It's tiring to listen to a little bit.
Exactly.
And Rush like saves you the trouble. I feel like Rush just presents this open-hearted music that you can just enjoy, and it's a beautiful thing.
Really well said.
That'd be like a good tagline for the band. Rush saves you the trouble.
So a couple things. One thing I want to mention, I think people who say that Rush is this kind of like cold experience, I think really haven't listened to them enough, because the band swings more than people give them credit for. And the way they sometimes hit those off beats all together at the same time, right? And it just, they have, it's not, there's a lot more feeling in this music than I think people often.
There's
think.
A lot, you know, Neil, I feel like he's talked about this is, you know, you hear him playing, you can almost imagine a man dancing. Like, he puts this sort of full body investment into the music. And it does swing in a bizarrely mathematically precise way.
Right.
Oh, by the way, they invented math rock too, but that's another show.
The other thing I want to say about this, to me, this is a sort of an amazing achievement that they write a song, record a song called The Spirit of Radio, and it is so perfectly made for radio.
And you know, at the end, when you feel like, oh, everything's going to end up happy because they're going to say echoes with the sound of silence, and they say salesman. And then just tear it up.
And then they tear it up. Right.
At the end. Yep. It's amazing ending to a song.
A little thing I've always wondered, because I don't think anything they do is accidental, is the way Getty's voice is treated in that song. Yeah. It's crackling like an old radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's just a beautiful little touch.
It really is. So, guys, they worked with a producer, quote unquote, for a lot of these classic albums. What kind of influence do you think he had? And was he just a guy that set the microphones up really well? Or what do you guys think?
Terry Brown.
Yeah.
I think it's just like, it's that relationship, you know?
Yeah. I think he had to have a great influence. I think they parted ways with him after Signals, and I mean, just personally, I feel like the best recordings they did were the ones they did with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't pinpoint what it is that changed, other than a lot of keyboards. maybe his job was to be like, hey guys,
too many keyboards.
I got some guitars.
Well, and we'll talk about Signals tomorrow, right? But the one of the other amazing backstories for this album, which I didn't know, like this has always been my favorite Rush album. But it wasn't until some of the Rush documentaries started to come out and they really like started talking much more about their career, kind of came into fuller focus. Like they were like super burnt out, right? Like they were, as we talked about, on the road 300 days a year playing these 20-minute like prog rock epics. Yeah. We talked about 2112 yesterday. After 2112, they had a couple more amazing albums, but like they got even proggier. I mean, you know, getting into Greek mythology and deep space and weaving the music together with that on Farewell to Kings and Hemispheres,
right?
Two incredible albums, but incredibly proggy, and they're playing that like 300 nights a year.
Unbelievable.
They were insanely burnt out, and this was like their take a step back, streamline it, you know, and their sound blossomed in this album. And you know, any fan who had heard their previous albums and then Permanent Waves came out, again, to have been able to hear it at the time, you know, would have just been so amazing. Oh, like for me, you put this on and Spirit of Radio is what comes out, and it's just like the perfect just blossoming of their sound, combining all the elements into these amazingly written songs.
Is there another song you guys would like to hear?
There's either there's Free Will, and then the last song on the album, Natural Science, is incredible as well. I'll let you guys choose.
I choose Free Will.
This album, it seems like they really took a turn and said, we're going to write like tight, you know, shorter songs. Although there's only six tracks on this album, so it's not entirely the case. But with these first two tracks, you definitely hear that. Like, it's more the radio Rush that we, you know, really came to know, I think, in this era.
Yeah, but which is not to say that it's not incredibly complex, right? And that's, to me, what is so amazing. Like, Spirit of Radio and Free Will, and obviously, like the solo in Free Will is just legendary for the sheer amount of ass that it kicks, right?
Yeah,
it's actually three solos at once.
It's incredibly complex, but it's all streamlined into this amazing songwriting, and it's just like condensed. You know, it's like concentrated Rush. The back half of the album is pretty proggy still, but it also brings up another point, which they talk about a lot, or at least Neil does from a drumming perspective. The amazing ability of a top form drummer to like to know when to really wail and, you know, and hit it and show off, and to know when to hold back. And he always talks about how he really makes a conscious effort to hold back a little bit in solos, because, you know, that's like Alex's solo. Like he, you know, he's going to keep a groove going. And Free Will is one of those where you really like hear the conscious choices of in the drumming, really brought to bear, because they're all like picking their moments really, really well. And it adds up to just obviously one of their most incredible songs.
Yeah, I think when you take, they're still kind of, we're coming down off the high of the incredible creativity of their super proggy albums before this. But combining that with the like creative constraint of having to put it into a kind of radio time length is just a perfect combination. And I think, you know, you mentioned Neil. I feel like his playing especially is so strong on these albums in these kind of middle radio years.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about the stuff he did on Signals, which we'll talk about later, but even like Grace Under Pressure after that. You know, he fit into that little short path. Like, he's so precise in what he does that he was able to condense everything he was doing on those earlier like 20-minute songs into a radio song. It's pretty incredible.
And how many bands had the self-awareness and the trust in each other to be able to pair their stuff back instead of going more indulgent in the other direction? Normally somebody in the band would say, hey, we need to cut these songs down, you know, we need to do a little less proggy stuff. Somebody's ego would get bruised like right away, right? But not this band.
You know, it's funny, and Patrick, this might make a good topic somewhere down the road, but it's one of my favorite things in rock music is when a band that is sort of off on the edges and doing some like weirder experimental stuff then all of a sudden like channels it to make like a pop song.
Yeah.
When that works, it, to me, it's so great, because they bring with them all those elements that made them interesting, but then, you know, make it work in something that is just really tight and in some ways maybe a little bit more accessible that you can sort of, you know, understand, but they don't lose those elements that made them interesting in the first place.
Yeah,
right?
As Bobby called it, condensed rush.
Yeah,
it takes a lot of discipline to do that.
Well, you get the impression too, you know, since they played live so much too, that they must have been listening. You know, they I'm sure they learned, you know, when they would do certain things that the crowd would just lose their minds.
Yeah.
So they figured out like, all right, we can do this.
True. Let's do a bunch of those together.
They were meticulous, you know, the documenters of their live shows too, which we will talk about. They studied themselves.
So the thing we didn't mention, so Permanent Waves, I think I said 1980. This is the one right before Moving Pictures.
Yeah.
So this was like sort of a bridge album, sort of set themselves up for the big success that was to come with the next one, right?
We're jumping around a little bit with the order. Yeah.
It's kind of the way I remember the 80s, though, the good parts. They didn't always happen in chronological order. That's
right. All right. This is great. And so tomorrow we're skipping ahead just a couple of years, right?
Right. Signals. Their bridge album from this era to the 80s.
All right. So you'll want to listen to that. How often do you guys, would you suggest people listen to Rock in the Suburbs?
Probably every day, or if not more.
At least a couple times a day.
Yeah. A couple times a day.
Yeah.
A couple times a day.
And rate and review too. That's really important,
yes,
right? From what I've heard.
Yes.
It's more fun than just listening. Participating by rating and reviewing.
Audience participation.
Emailing and calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can call a number. It's
612-440-1984.
There you go. And you can leave a message there. And if you know anything about Rush.
We should also give Charles his cell phone for people to call if they want to talk about Rush.
And if you want to write a rock suite of songs about this podcast, that's a good idea too.
Even better.
That's an assignment for Night Series.
If you can play drums while you're doing that.
We'll work on that. We do have a couple concept album ideas in the works for a Rock in the Suburbs concept album.
Nice.
Oh, wow. All right.
Yeah.
But you know, short of that, a phone call.
Yeah.
Or
phone
a
call,
rating.
Leave a message.
Whatever kind of time you got. Yeah.
If you're not into the whole talking thing, if you're more into the writing thing.
Not into the whole brevity thing.
Yeah, that's right. For brevity thing. Then you can email us, rock@suburbspod.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can interact with us on the social medias. You guys are into all that stuff, right? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Sure,
yeah.
We have a Facebook page for the band.
Yes, I'll get to that. So first of all, @SuburbsPod for all of those for us. And then for Night Streets.
Facebook.com/Night Streets.
That'd do it, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys are on Bandcamp, right?
Bandcamp as well.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's where I listen.
And occasionally you guys play shows. So if people are in the D.C. area, I know you don't have anything planned right now, but at some point you'll get back out there and you'll play at Slash Run, right?
So I was going to say Slash Run. Coolest spot in DC, one of the coolest places I've seen in my travels. Awesome bar. Shout out to Slash Run. We'll play there every now and then.
And we'll let you know if you join us on Facebook.
That's true.
Yeah. There you go. So, all right. Where are we going with this? I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
Bobby Padovic.
Charles Andrews.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
I know him, and he does.
And you're my fact-checking cuz.